It is Saturday, the 11th of May, 2024, and this is The Future of Photography.
The Future of Photography.
Hey, Jeremiah, how are you?
Hello. I'm good. And looking forward to talking about our subject of the week, street photography.
Yeah. Sadly, just the two of us this week. Chris is on his annual Abbey workshop this week and next week, which is, I think, is his biggest event of the year. And he was telling us last week, this is, I think, the 17th year he's run this workshop, this residential week-long workshop. So that's a pretty good stint, actually. That's a long-running thing, isn't it?
I only regret that we were not there to kind of create some havoc.
It would have been, because I don't think we speak the language. I think this one is properly in German as the language for this workshop. So I don't know about you, but I studied German.
My German's rusty.
Yeah, I studied in the loosest sense of the word German for 1 year when I was 14 years old. So
As did I when I was 14 in high school for a year. Don't know why, but maybe to read Kant.
in the original, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it loses a lot in translation.
I wouldn't know. My brain is not sophisticated enough to appreciate that sort of thing in any language at all.
Anyway, you know, talking about street photography, which is a genre of photography that I so love, so appreciate, and yet I would really not consider myself in any way, shape, or form a street photographer, even though I, you know, over the years, of course, who hasn't taken their camera for a walk and snapped. But it's not the continuing aesthetic that I engage in overall. I tend to really look for areas without people, though I have such a passionate love for great street photographers. And I have noticed, and this will kind of really be the operative kind of cleave in the genre, is it best to be right in the faces of those that you're photographing? In other words, you have access to a community, to a kind of a group, to an experience that allows you in. There's trust. And that enables you to capture images that people outside that group would not have. Or is it one of those things that you sit with a long lens or quietly on a street corner and very quietly peep into, make yourself very invisible? And those two kinds of imagery really, for me, define street photography. In its kind of broadest sense. In other words, a wide lens of, say, a person in shadow walking across a brightly high-lit wall into another shadow that just creates a great graphic is very different than being up close and personal with a kind of, you know, 20 millimeter in the face of, you know, two teens that are kind of screaming at a rock concert or something like that. So those are, you know, that is worth it if you're shy, obviously. Being engaged and upfront and in this situation may allow you to overcome that shyness, reverse mentality, pushing through that and really force you to engage in the very things that you're interested in. On the other hand, recognizing kind of the abstraction or form that exists in people being observed from a distance creates yet another aesthetic. And it's rare for photographers to work both sides of that fence.
Interesting, and very timely for two reasons. I think one is that the, you know, here in the UK, people are starting to get out and about a bit more. It's really sunny here this weekend. We've had a late spring this year, so people are out and about more. So lots of stuff to take photos of, lots of people to take photos of. The other reason, and this is purely coincidental, is that the other day popped up in my YouTube feed a video about a fella with this enormous lens. And it was, I think it was a 600 mil lens or a 400 to 600 mil lens, which he then decided to attach a micro four thirds camera to the back of to like make it like a 1,000 millimeter lens and go out and do street photography with that. So yeah, that's the and it was quite amusing. It was all done in good fun, but it was interesting. Got some very different photos from the sorts of things that you might normally consider, you know, street photography to look like. So yeah, it's an interesting topic. I think I've done a lot of street photography myself over the years. Do I consider myself a street photographer? I don't know. It's a bit of a slippery genre to grab hold of. I almost think of myself sometimes as taking photos of people interacting with the urban landscape, you know, in the street.
Wouldn't that make you a street photographer?
Well, does it? Because maybe it does. But I'm not of the, particularly of the in your face variety. And I always forget to say, there's the Magnum photographer, Bruce. Is it Gildon or is it the other one? I can never remember. Who was very famous for getting in people's faces, and did a lot of stuff in New York through the 70s, 80s, you know, all sorts of stuff, 90s. That's not me. But equally, you know, I'm not the sort of person who doesn't, you know, who excludes people from their photos. You know, I like to see people interacting with the environment. You know, sometimes it's groups of people, sometimes it's, you know, a little vignette or something slightly amusing happening. Not quite to an Elliot Erwitt standard. You know, I'm not that humorous in my photography, but there's all sorts of things going on there. Yeah, I think distance is one of them, definitely.
Do you consider yourself invisible when you're on the street with a camera? In other words, do you want people to notice that you're there with a camera or not? That's probably a good place to begin, right?
Yeah.
Are you stealth or are you standing there snapping a picture? Do you ask permission? Do you mind if I take your picture? I've been in that situation, you know, both ways, even though it's not my operative, but I do love photography and I'll capture something that I see is kind of stimulating to my aesthetic and want to record it. But my overall body of work doesn't have that much. Though on my website, I do have a folio of my, I guess, real world work of people in various circumstances globally. And in those cases, I guess I was very present. In other words, I did not want to make myself invisible. I was very much a part of the community or the situation, sometimes at great risk, especially, you know, traveling kind of far afield. But at the end of the day, if you gain the trust of people around, if they accept you, that gives you the opportunity of opening up a huge, huge, just world of being able to capture the human condition. And I think that's really at the heart of it. In other words, there's the graphic minimalist or, you know, jammed up aesthetic of what the world is. Taken from a more painterly approach. And then there's, you know, moving into a situation where your goal is to capture the, in the words of Cartier-Bresson, right, the decisive moment. Mm-hmm. That again records the emotional value of being human on Earth. And I think both have great value, of course. War photographers generally are very much into that, you know, the cost, the price, the emotional distress of that kind of combat. Firefighters, cops, those kinds of dramatic situations where you have photographers following closely. And then, you know, then you have the kind of very, very what I would consider more quiet, and it doesn't even necessarily mean a longer lens. you know, just capturing light, shadow, and using people as, you know, a modeling or graphic element. I mean, there's, you know, there's photographers who will like hide a camera, for example, in, you know, in a construction site, you know, and just buried in the pipes and kind of infrastructure of, and maybe set a automatic flash maybe 10 feet from it.
Like a trail camera or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's triggered by movement and just have people moving in and out, triggering the flash. It happens so fast. People generally on a street or moving through wouldn't even notice that they had their picture taken. And yet it's a very, very sharp and focused sensibility. And of course the focus will be on a specific place. And those reveal really interesting stuff. Is that kind of classic street photography or performative, or is it just a trick of the trade? I don't know. We can discuss.
There's a lot to, in what you've just said. There's a lot to unpack. I mean, you were talking about, you know, it being in the thick of it or being you know, somewhat remote. And I'm trying to think how I set myself out. I guess I aim for me to be quiet and less noticed, but my photos not to be. So I suspect I am more of the candid type of street photographer when it comes to photographing people, rather than the shock and awe type of just jumping in front of people and flashing them straight in their eyes. And equally, I'm not quite so much the sniper from a distance either. If I go out, you know, to take street photography, I'm usually using a sort of medium to wide lens, you know, something in the high 20s or something like that, you know, just to because the other thing is it's the sort of the context for me as well. So when it's about people in their environment, you have to have some of that environment in the shot. So it wouldn't be a lot of good for me to be, you know, to be right up in somebody's face or to be shooting with a lens so long that the field of view was too narrow to show anything. But it's so there's that element of it. It's interesting. I mean, I know there are cultural norms as well, right? So, you know, and in some countries you know, it's a shame we don't have Chris here actually, because there are cultural norms in Germany that are different from how they are here in the UK, and laws, of course, in Germany as well.
if we tie a line to the future of photography here, we could probably describe the development of camera technology, and not necessarily something defined as a camera, but something that can capture a device that is worn, i.e., you know, glasses,
a top hat with a circular hole cut in the front of it.
Yeah, that kind of thing, a briefcase.
So
there is that as our technologies move in kind of more miniaturized or, you know, more continuous capture, it will change the kinds of images that are taken. For example, if you just walk down Regent Street with a continuous capture pin, you know, swinging your arms, no sense of you know, when you're capturing, you're going to end up with, you know, in the a monkey can do it. You're going to end up with some kind of image as you review everything. Now, that's not a terrible thing. No slight on monkey photographers at all. But I think it's the choice in editorial capture. In other words, instead of making your choice, instead of making your choice right there of when to push the shutter, you're continuing a capture, and the choice is made afterwards when you're reviewing.
I'm not sure I agree with you on that, right? So
discuss.
So there are plenty of cameras that are discreet enough to be, you know, secreted about your person these days, or at least very unnoticeable. And my own personal experience here in the UK is if somebody's wearing a body camera or something like that, nobody bats an eyelid, right? And maybe that's the city life. Maybe that's, you know, maybe that's because, you know, my nearest big city is London, which is one of the most, you know, televised cities in the world, right? You know, for you know, CCTV and stuff. But nobody would bat an eyelid. And very few people even worry if you are taking a photograph with a phone. But I don't think having a continuous capture for me would necessarily be... I think that's just the technology. And I don't think it changes the vision that you might have and the image you might capture. I could imagine myself, if I was doing that, I'd probably want some kind of... you know, some kind of clicker in my other hand. It was like, okay, well, I will record timestamps or something like that, you know, that marks the video that I'm capturing. Or I mean, as ridiculous as that sounds, you could equally have a camera with a remote shutter and just press the clicker, right? And the camera, you know, your hands are nowhere near it. But I don't think that takes away the craft, because a lot of the craft is about anticipation in street photography. It's about, you know, it's about anticipating when a person is going to walk through a shaft of light. It's about anticipating the movement of crowd, so to get something interesting that you've pre-visualized. It's about finding the right point of view. You know, to you know, again with a perhaps a composition in mind, right? So as opportunistic as street photography it can be, right, if you're, you know, you can just walk down the street, I don't think a continuous capture takes away the art and the craft of street photography. I mean, it'll make your editing a lot harder, right? Because you'll have to find those images afterwards, you know, which would be like hunting for a needle in a haystack.
But I think you just said something important, which is you have to have a point of view, or you should have a point of view, or it helps to have a point of view. If you don't, it's just random capture, but that random capture may be consistent enough in defining where you're walking, what time of day you're walking, how slowly or fast you're walking, into what crowds you're walking. So there may be a combination of a point of view or an aesthetic that you're looking for, but it's like taking a motorized film, you know, blanket of, you know, 18 frames a second or 6 frames a second, or a video capture at, say, 6 or 8K that you can then, you know, pull a very detailed photograph from. But if you're not in that situation, then you won't be able to capture it. I do think that it helps when you have a point of view in determining a consistent aesthetic. So, and gear has a lot to do with this. I mean, is, you know, if you're used to working with a camera covering your face, basically bringing your device to your eyes and kind of, you know, removing your facial expression from the environment, is very different than holding an iPhone at arm's length, looking at a screen where people can really see you. And I do find that there is a less threatening aspect of people taking pictures on their iPhone, A, because it's ubiquitous, and B, because you can see their face, and if they look goofy enough, they're not threatened that you're taking some kind of aggressive image. Whereas if you're kind of pointed with a, you know, an expensive camera over your face aimed at them and shooting them, then I think there is a different response from your subject.
I think so. And for me, it's part of you're targeting them at that point, right? Yeah. So, you know, the other thing that is, you know, is a little bit more disarming, even if you do have a camera up to your eye, is if you're there before they are, and then you're there after them, and then they've walked past you, and you think, oh, well, it obviously wasn't me then. You know, that's just, you know, one very basic and you know, simple technique just to, you know, to be less threatening. But I think, from my own experience, walking around with a big camera like that can go, you know, two ways, where people either mug for the camera or they don't. I remember not so long ago, I was in London. I think I was just hanging around Soho area, and I was looking for a scene. And this girl was walking along. She was a skater. She had a longboard with her, and she had a really cool look. And as she walked by, and as it happens, I wasn't particularly going to take a photograph of her, but she walked by, she deliberately held up her skateboard between herself and me, so that I couldn't take a photo of her, and I didn't. So, you know, I tried to respect that wish, right? But you know, that you wouldn't get that perhaps if you had a mobile phone, and certainly if you were just wearing some kind of small, you know, action camera like an Insta 360 or a GoPro, or if you something like that, or a DJI one, you know, you wouldn't have any of that. So I think in that sense, you know, gear does matter. I mean, that was our other candidate for a conversation today, was actually those times when gear does matter. And I think in street photography, depending upon your intent, that is actually
time when gear matters. I remember a few years ago, I went for a walk around Central Park. It was during COVID. I was under house arrest, basically, in a hotel room for a few weeks, and I was allowed to go out masked, and just I was near the park, so I would just walk around the park and then go back to my cell. But I had a Insta 360 with me. Just look at the draw when I arrived in New York, and I was able to kind of connect my earbuds, my Apple earbuds, to the camera, so I could walk around and just go, you know, snap or shoot picture, and it would trigger the, you know, the image. So I hooked up a little aspect of, I was felt like Ziska Fairtog, man with a camera, first. Anyway, I was wearing the camera around my neck at kind of chest level.
Right.
I was shouting orders to the camera through my earbuds, but I was masked, so nobody could hear me. And I just was walking around the park and taking pictures surreptitiously, and got some great stuff quite close to people, very wide, obviously, but, you know, reasonable quality. And it was a lot of fun and kept my head together, you know, during those times, you know, and it also helped me be very present, because one of the things that we didn't discuss, we talked about the aesthetic or capture or having a point of view, all for the, I guess, the end result of creating a nice photograph, whether it's printed or posted. But there is something about street photography which is an addictive process of being absolutely present. Yeah. And it puts you in your environment where every little nuance of light, people, movement, how fast, your relationship to them in space, what's coming up, what's behind you. And that is, I think that is something super important. Even if you didn't ever manage to get a great capture on that particular walk, the notion that you really felt alive on Earth is a great benefit for seeking that. I suppose it's like, you know, not that I'm into hunting in any way, shape, or form, but the, you know, early man going on a hunt and smelling the forest and looking at footprints and listening to the cracks of tree branches and, you know, feeling which way the wind is blowing. Those kinds of experiences, just of being human in the moment, are in our consciousness, is one of the essential elements of being alive. And so if we connect that to the photographic process, this is a practice that should be encouraged. And not to go out with listening to music and all of that, but just being only there.
Yes.
To observe.
Do you know? Yeah, totally with you. There's a few things that relate there. I mean, yeah, I don't listen to music when I'm doing street photography. I find that a distraction. If I'm going to be actually going out to making an effort, rather than just, you know, sort of have a camera in my hand when I'm going from A to B, if I'm actually going out to do, you know, the photography, it's definitely, you know, experiencing everything that the space has to offer. And that is absolutely includes hearing, and that's, you know, that can be a great way to sense something is just about to happen. Right. I mean, yeah, obviously, an obvious example would be a siren, right? But yeah, coming down a street, and that might be a sign that you should get out of the street. Although in London, you just have to look both ways all the time on both sides of the road, because you never know when you're going to get run down by
and
a
up and down
or something, or an electric bicycles these days. Oh, blimey, I really hope I don't get hit by one of those. That hurt, that would really hurt. But the they're definitely experiencing the moment. The other thing is, and I don't know if you get this, but I get, because of the photography that I have done, I then get to appreciate those same moments, even if I don't have a camera. So I can be walking along and I'll see something and that's a great photograph. Doesn't matter if I take a photograph of it or not. You know, and do you know what? It goes back to what you said about Cartier-Bresson, because there's two interpretations of the phrase decisive moment, at least two that I'm aware of. One is a very common one, which is, you know, the crux of the event, if you like. You know, the moment that a thing happened I have captured the decisive moment. There is another interpretation, which I've heard people say that actually was closer to what Cartier-Bresson meant, which is that the decisive moment is when all the elements of your composition come into the right place. So, yeah, you might have set up the basic composition, but you're anticipating somebody walking through it. Or think of an example. Well, the man jumping a puddle in Paris by the railway station. Or the other one is the photograph of a cyclist at the bottom of a spiral staircase. You know, two very, very, very famous Cartier-Bresson photographs, right? You know, the decisive moment is not the fact that, you know, something of, you know, newsworthy importance happened, although it can be that, but it could easily be just the person smiles at the right time, or the various different elements of the composition come into alignment and stuff like that. So, and that's something that I appreciate more and more. And so it's the lasting gift of, particularly of street or generally urban photography for me, is that ability to spot stuff and appreciate it when it happens, and no matter whether I've captured it or not.
Isn't the decisive moment, if we just break it down, a brief moment in time wherein one makes a decision to capture? So there's no right or wrong here, but it does encourage a kind of consciousness of time, or the movement of time, or one's passage through time, to stop time at that very moment. One makes a decision, whether it's conscious or unconscious, to capture that moment. And that is really about the decisive moment. And so, you know, we can look back on pictures that we just snapped and think, well, I really didn't even see that thing in the background. I just felt something. Or, you know, the siren that was coming in back of me, I just held my camera up, and into the corner of the frame, a blurred ambulance swept into frame, just as a mother, you know, smiling with her baby pram, you know, was in the foreground. Two completely different expressions of one drama and one joy in the same image. Just making this up in my head, but that's a decisive moment. One is anticipation. One is you were looking, the audio anticipation of the, you know, the ambulance coming, and the woman with her pram moving towards us. all led to that perfect moment that expressed the, you know, the convolution of the human experience at any one time. So,
or at least captured a picture anyway.
Yeah, but I think that the joy of street photography really is a profound, say, philosophy of being aware of the moment in time that you exist in that particular space. And, you know, if we can walk and talk and have our health and are not kind of in pain and we're reasonably well fed and emotionally emotionally connected, then there's great joy in just kind of putting one foot in front of the other. And the street photography gives us, in a way, an excuse. So if we just go out for, I mean, you've done photo walks and you know, we are all going on this route and there's some beautiful buildings. This time of day is great, or it's very foggy and moody and whatnot. The streets will be very empty or the streets will be crowded, but there is a some kind of excuse to seek something out. I mean, you know, we're looking for something that just gives us the fuel to kind of move forward. But the kind of distillation of those moments seen through our cameras, our gear, is a benefit, I think, to the whole experience of being alive. And that's why street photography, often those who are really, really what I would consider great at it, which by my rule that their pictures are in some way, small or big, awe-striking in their ability to kind of recognize something on the street that is at one moment random and on the other considered. And, you know, so my hat goes off to it. And if I was wearing a hat, it would go off.
it's an audio only this week, Jeremiah. You can be wearing a hat if you like.
Yes. Oh, good. My virtual hat goes off. And I think that, you know, maybe, you know, in our subsequent podcast, we can discuss how different genres of photography themselves are, in a way, revelatory to a way of seeing the world or being a human, you know, whether it's compassion or whether it's distance or abstraction or philosophy or existentialism or whatever it is, our approach to taking pictures can really help us understand who we are. And that's really what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, now that's really interesting, because where my head was going to go until just not to just towards the end of what you said there is, you know, the future of photography, the future of street photography. And, you know, clearly, you know, wearable cameras have been with us for some time, the ability to capture video for hours on end, should you choose to, or to remote trigger a stills camera. All of that's all there and all good. We could talk about the future of how it is that we extract from that kind of media. At what point are we going to be able to just say, you know, hey, AI, assistant, can you find me the interesting shots from my walk across town, please? But that then, and all that technology enablement can kick in. But what you just said at the end there about us, personal choices and thoughts and decision making and things like that, it takes all of that away, doesn't it? It's like, I am one of these photographers. I'm not worried about AI, and that's not just because I'm an amateur rather than a pro. It's because I think, the photography is as much in the head of the photographer as it is in the equipment that you use to make the image, right, or to capture the image. So I'm good. I'm not worried about it at all. But it is that, isn't it? The future of photography of street photography will still be about people being out on the streets, interacting at the very least with their environment, if not with individual other people in that environment. And there's, I can't see that. I can't see that changing, unless of course it gets banned. But I can't see.
That's interesting. I think I'll look for some interesting images that I created using AI that emulate street photography, which I have. I have an unseen folio of people in crowds. They look absolutely. Totally real, frighteningly real in a way. And, you know, I did work at capturing a certain emotive value there. But it also shows that can I project my imagination on a real world moment that reveals a kind of truth, even though maybe that's the whole point of art anyway. But and comparing that to something that I would have captured, say, in West Africa on the street, you know, or Bogota. Both, for me, you know, creatively, have value. Obviously, it's less dangerous to shoot something or to create something on your computer at home here in Venice than it is, you know, in a slum in Bogota. But they, you know, they're both kind of revelatory about the human condition. So I think it's really about how people see it at the end of the day and what it provokes, if anything.
Okay. All right. That sounds like a good
on
a
that
good,
happy note.
It's a happy note. No, I think it's nice to talk about these things sometimes and just have a chat, because we do talk about these various different forms of photography every now and again, and it's always a nice to have a rambling chat. So listeners, I hope you've enjoyed. Oh, it's not been too rambly for you, but I hope you've enjoyed our chat, and let us know your own thoughts as we in a Discord, because I know there's quite a few people in our Discord community who are into some level of street photography, different kinds of street photography. So, okay, on to picks of the week then, Jeremiah. And I think...
Street photographers.
Street photographers. So, yes, playing your now standard role in the picks of the week process, you've brought us some street photography that actually matches, some actual photography that matches the topic for today.
I did.
So tell us about that.
Yeah. These are prize winners of really, really accomplished street photographers, each of them, presenting different kind of aesthetic, a different kind of approach, color, black and white, etc. But they are worth a deep dive. Each of them are masters of the process, and I am in awe of all of them. So obviously we're not doing a visual this week. But
the link is in the show notes, everybody, though, for anybody that would like to look at them.
Really encourage people to dive in and really have fun with these and follow these photographers if they are consistently posting. Do a dive into them. You will be rewarded amply.
Yes. There's a couple here, actually. So one I'll describe briefly. One of them is there's a mural on a street, on a wall, of a gorilla, and it looks like he's pulling the wall apart and he's reaching out with his fist in a King Kong style. And the photographer has chosen to capture a woman as she walks by the hand. So it looks like the gorilla is reaching out to capture her. So that's quite funny. Then there's a couple of really large yellow rubber ducks, sort of 20 feet tall, taller than the two humans, way taller than the two humans that are also in the picture. That's from, I think that one's from Belgium. I have seen similar in the docks in London, actually. A few months ago, I saw a really large yellow rubber duck in Canary Wharf, the financial district where all the banks are in London. So there's lots of good stuff here. It's good fun. Some of it's humorous, dogs sitting in a pub, people interacting with each other in various different ways. All good stuff. Liking that a lot. I like, makes me smile to see it. Makes me smile. Okay, right. So mine is a software release that's come out recently. And this is the release, I think it's release 1.19, but that doesn't matter too much, of Luminar Neo. which we both use and both enjoy. This release has two new AI editing features in it. It's me that's bringing the AI this week, which is somewhat unusual, perhaps. But I've been playing with these, and they're just great, right? They're just so easy to do, and I love that. One of the things I love about Luminar is that they try and think about the tooling from the user's point of view and what the user would want to achieve, not from the technical change that's being made upon the image. So two here, and I've put some the link in the show notes to the TFOP. Shared photo album, and I've put a couple of photos in here and just show you the before and after, although forgive me, the after affected ones might be showing before because it uploaded funny, so apologies for that if you go look at them. But the first one is a panorama of Niagara Falls when I was in Niagara last summer, and I know this is taken at lunchtime because it's taken from the window of the restaurant where we had our lunch. Right? So it's definitely a middle of the day photograph, and it was, you know, up a tower block restaurant at the top of a hotel tower in Niagara, and it's a panorama of both the Canadian and the American Falls, and, you know, some of the town around as well. So the first one is the bright sunshine middle of the day photo, and then the treated one is using the new Luminar Neo Twilight Enhancer AI. honestly, I think it's a little bit heavy handed. My use of it's a little bit heavy handed in this instance, but it's really interesting what it does. So this is, I guess it's a panorama, but I guess it's a landscape, right? So it's got a horizon halfway up the photograph. You've got sky at the top, and you've got land and waterfalls and rivers underneath. But it knows where those are, at least either that or it does it just, you know, geometrically. But I think it knows where they are with AI masking. And it changes the sky in one way when it makes it look more twilighty. And you've got a range of color options you can go for. You can go for golden hour. You can go for a blue. You can go for mauve. I think this one was called mauve. It then, just above the horizon, inserts what it calls a dawn. So it's actually, you know, the glow that would come from a sun that's not yet risen. So, which I find a little bit odd. It calls it dawn because it's actually the twilight enhancer as opposed to the dawn enhancer. But, you know, maybe they think twilight can happen at both ends of the day. I don't know. Maybe that's just me that doesn't think that's odd. But you can alter that. You can alter the effect and the amount of the effect and things like that. And then it handles exposure really well. It dumbs it down. It's kind of reminiscent of a Sergio Leone movie, you know, like where the cowboys are walking around at so-called twilight, but actually they've got really harsh shadows and stuff like that. So, but it's
one thing that that Luminar does really amazing is not only does it kind of shift the sky to the mood you want, but it will put the reflection of that in any water. So if you are photographing that on a lake, a river, ocean, whatever, a wet puddle, the enhancement of the sky will be reflected in water. It recognizes that.
It's good. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. So the other one, and this is a long pick of the week. Sorry, there's another image which is using the new water enhancer AI, and this one I'm really grateful for. Right. So again, this is from my trip last year to Canada, and one of the things that happened when we were in the Canadian Rockies is there was a load of smoke in the atmosphere from the wildfires of that season, and so we never really got to appreciate the full majesty of the Rocky Mountains with the deep blue skies and the mountain caps and stuff like that. So this is a photo. Again, it's a panorama. This time it's Lake Louise, very famous place. No doubt most of our listeners will have seen photos of Lake Louise if they haven't had the opportunity to go there themselves. And this was a pretty murky day, right? And as a result, we didn't get the classic, you know, bright blue water that these lakes in the Rockies are famous for. So using the new water enhancer from Luminar AI, I just added it in. And it's literally one slider. It does the masking, it does the color, it does the exposure and lighting effects. Literally one slider to change the color of the water. And this one, between the two images in our gallery, much more subtle, deliberately so, but it gives you just the, yeah, this is kind of more what I was seeing, and of course it's more what you'd expect as well, so kind of like tarting it up a little bit, I guess.
Either that or buy a postcard.
Yeah, where would be the fun in that? Okay, and you've dropped some of your images in here to...
I have a street photography.
Or not. Street, yeah.
Yeah, street photography that it's made up street photography.
Or yes.
This is just stuff I just happen to have lying around.
Yeah, that's cool. So, yeah, enjoy those folks as well then. Yes, I know that there's a fella on a train, looks like he's straight out of some sort of blaxploitation movie. There is a group of rather underfed-looking, miserable people with coats and woolly hats on. And then there is a pretend, for the sake of the record here, don't take this down, anybody in the States. This is a pretend march of some sort outside the White House, which looks like it's grown quite a lot, actually. The White House looks like it's double-fronted these days.
Just shows you what you can do on a moment's notice.
Yeah, it's cool. Excellent. All right, well, there we go. So I think that's us done for this week, isn't it?
It is, yes. And,
yeah, thank you, everybody, for listening. We have been the future of photography, just the two of us, and I think, sadly, just the two of us next time around as well. Then Chris will be back after that. But thank you for listening, and we will see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Future of Photography. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your other podcasts. Find the show notes and more information at thefutureofphotography.com.